The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on July 18, 1993 in Sri Mayapur.
Nimbarka, they all visited at one time or another. Ramchandra came here on his way to Dandakaranya. After killing Hiranyakashipu, Narasimhadev came and stayed here. Balaram, when he came on a visiting all the holy places, he stopped here. Lord Jagannath came from Jagannath Puri and came here. Jagannath Temple is the place where Lord Jagannath came here. Many other gurus that came, not all are recorded. Shiva, Brahma, the seven rishis, they all came. So Lord Nityananda, when he was explaining all these secrets about Navadvip Dham, that this is not different from Vrindavan, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears here. At that time he explained how Lord Brahma came, and he was doing tapasya in the center. And the whole Mahabhadip is like a lotus. And it's like Brahma sits in the center of the lotus. So he came and he sat in the center. That's why the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, which is where Lord Brahma was sitting, is known as Antardvip. Antar means the center of the lotus. So Navadvip is known as the nine islands, or Navadvip, because it's got one center island and nine other islands. So that time Lord Nityananda, he told that in the future that there will be a very wonderful temple which will come up here. In Bengali he said, Akadbhut Mandir Hoibe Prakash Gauranga Nitya Seva Hoibe Vikash. This wonderful temple will come, an Adbhut Mandir, and from here the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will be spread all over. So we're trying to build that temple. In the future, we are designing that to be much bigger than the samadhi. Samadhi is very much less than half the size, or very small compared to that temple. It won't be just a temple; it will be a Vedic planetarium. The idea will show the whole existence, the universe that we know, what's beyond the universe. The whole material world, the spiritual world, the world in between. Then finally the Golok Vrindavan. Everything will be shown in the planetarium. So it's called Temple of the Vedic Planetarium. Radha Madhav and the eight Sakis will go there also. There will be a life-size Chaitanya Mahaprabhu deity. And then deities of the disciplic succession. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had a vision of a very big temple. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house is just opposite the Jalangi River. Just if you go see to the south, there's a big banyan tree, there's one house there. So he lived there, and from there he could see the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. He saw a vision of a very big temple, and he saw a city of all devotees. So we're also doing a have a plan in the future that we hope this develops like a city with so many devotees coming and staying here to practice the spiritual life. So like that, that's in a brief background of Mayapur. This was birthplace of Lord Chaitanya 100 years ago when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he came here to find a birthplace. At that time, there was no Prachin Mayapur, there was no this Mayapur, there was no temple. in Navadvip town was there, and then here the villages were here. So that time nobody claimed to know where the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya was. They said it had been lost in the Ganga. Ganga was shifting here and there. So the Ganga birthplace is misplaced. We don't know where it is. So then he did a lot of research, went into the British record, went into different records, the old Shastric records, and he got the idea that there must be somewhere here, because at that time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be doing his kirtan and Chankaji would be disturbed by the sound of the kirtan. He could hear it at night. So Chankaji house is a fixed place. The Bamanpukur market is actually the house of the Chankaji. He was the magistrate at the time of the Hussein Shah for the town of Navadvip. Also the Balal Sen Diba, or Doba, that's his house, that's also in Bamanpukur. He was 1,000 years ago the ruler of Bengal before the Mughal invasion. He was the last Hindu king before the Mughals came. So his capital was here only. So when the Mughals came, he covered up his house with mud, with dirt. There's some history like that. So his house is still there. Now they excavated it, took out the dirt, and they're gradually they're showing here's the rooms. And they took some valuable things out and they took to the archaeological museum. That we don't know. They don't let anyone see when they take out the things. So that also showed that the town in those days was on this side of the river. Because wherever the king is, naturally the town will be all around. So, for various reasons, he thought it must be somewhere here. But he didn't know the exact location. So there was one place in the little high land. And he asked the farmers, why no one is cultivating. He said, that land is a useless land because only Tulsi grows there. Whatever you plant, only Tulsi comes up, the sacred tree. So we leave it. It's a hopeless land. So then he got, that time there was a great Vaishnava in Navadvip who he accepted as a guru. His name was Siddha Jagannath Das Babaji. He had realized Krishna. He was a Siddh called Siddha because he had achieved his spiritual realization. So that time he was over 110 years old. So he was so old that he was, you see his picture downstairs, he's very old. He's just chanting his japa. His body is very old. So he couldn't walk. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur carried him in a basket on his head and was walked over here and there to see that in this area, where was the birthplace. When he got to a particular place, Jagannath Das Babaji, 110, he just can't even, he's all arthritis, he's bent. He jumps up and he starts leaping. Hriva, Gauranga, Gauranga! He's just jumping. This is our place. So from that they know that that was the exact place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. So then they established one temple there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur begged door to door, 1 rupee from each person. Since he was a grihastha, he didn't want people to give more. He said, just give me 1 rupee. Of course, those days 1 rupee was much more than it is today. Now 1 rupee can't buy anything. But 1 rupee was not a lot, it was not a little. It was just a moderate. So he was taking 1 rupee from everyone, and he built one house there and temple. Then after him, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur built a birthplace temple. One of his disciples broke off and he went to Navadvip and he established one competition. He said, no, this is the real old Mayapur, Prachin Mayapur. And about 50 years ago or 45 years ago, then they claimed that was their birthplace because people were coming here. So then there was a court case when this post office was declared Sri Mayapur, meaning it was a holy place. because in Shastra it says Mahaprabhu was born in Mayapur. So they named this Sri Mayapur Dham or Sri Mayapur. So some people oppose that, no, that shouldn't be called Sri Mayapur. So one Lord Anderson, who that time was a viceroy, Lord Anderson was the viceroy of, or representing the viceroy of England in Calcutta. He came up here and he did an investigation, which was correct or not. So he also found that since this is very close to the Chankazi's birthplace, according to whatever evidence was available, there was no reason to think that this wasn't the birthplace, that this was Mayapur before. The Muslims there start calling it Mayapur. So people try to say, oh, this is Mayapur, but actually since so long it's been known as Mayapur. So that Lord, he also accepted that, okay, this is all right to be called Sri Mayapur. Still in Navadvip, some people, they are claiming that's their birthplace. In any case, all this is within the nine islands of Navadvip. But according to our understanding and research and gifts of our previous acharyas, that this is the original birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we are trying to develop one spiritual city here, and every year devotees come from all over the world. We take them on a walking parikram for 7 days on all the nine islands. You're also welcome to come on the parikram if you like. Everyone is welcome. Of course, for 7 days, because we're building tents and providing food and everything, it's about, I think, 900 rupees or 1,000 rupees or something. Because each place we build all tents and toilets and everything, so there's a big expense. Costs a lot. In the future, we want to have fixed places at all the places. This is also the world headquarters of ISKCON. But ISKCON is actually decentralized in the sense that every branch is financially autonomous, manpower autonomous. Only spiritually they're linked up, and we have one meeting once a year here where we make the rules for the whole year. Then all the leaders, they go around the world preaching. So officially this is the registered office, this is the world headquarters. But it's not that type of world headquarters that day to day, you know, we're managing. But one secretary is here who receives the mail and sends out all the information, and here the meetings are held. And this is a spiritual headquarters where people come to get the spiritual rejuvenation, and they come here and gather for any major meeting. So because we're trying to do more than just have a temple, we're building a planetarium, we want to have museums, and we want to have different types of exhibits. We're having also a school, university is planned to give postgraduate degrees, especially in Vaishnava-related teachings, as something unique. We also have to gear up for having a lot of pilgrims coming here. So we have different activities. Some people are running computer. We have a printing press here. You saw the printing press, the BBT? We have a publishing unit. You can see we have offset press and computer typesetting. Then we also have, of course, our Gurukul, which is like going up to the secondary level. Then we're planning now the university, as I mentioned. We hope to have that started by 2 or 3 years from now. Then we give out the free food every Friday and Saturday to all the people that want. Prabhupada said that wherever Krishna is present, he is the father of everyone, so nobody should go hungry. It's like if your father is there, the son comes, naturally, their father will feed the son. So we have free food at least 2 days a week. And the rest of the week, we give subsidized food. Sula Bhojanaloy. Was it 5 rupees or 6 rupees? 5 rupees. There's a 6 rupees cost. The giving for 5 rupees. All full plate, 2 sabjis and rice, dal, everything. And the free feeding, that's more simple. So then there's also a lot of construction planning. We have many architects from all over the world, from Poland, from Europe, from South America. We made a little exhibition, an expo, but that's already about 4 or 5 years old now. We want to change it and computerize it. But so far we're just discussing how to do that. We have some devotees working on multimedia on the computer to make some multimedia presentation. So we have artists here who are doing painting, doing sculpture. We're using that in the samadhi. Then we have horticulturalists. One very successful horticulturist from America, from Canada, he's come here. He's going to he wants to bring in all the major plants from all over the world, whatever are in India and then whatever aren't, to bring, so that here in Mayapur, all the plants of the world you can find here, whatever can grow here. So like that, we're trying to gradually develop the things. We want to have ecological place, so we're designing in such a way that agriculture in the future will be totally organic. All the natural, all the city will be ecological, recycling everything. So when people come from around the world, they can see that although we are trying to maintain the ancient system, we're also on the cutting edge of technology, which basically is not difficult, because the newest technology goes back, when you talk about ecology, it goes back basically to the same things that the rishis had spoken. They were automatically ecologically balanced. So it's that part is not too difficult. But in terms of like sewage recycling and all that, we had to use because cities were different. And I don't know exactly how cities ran in olden time, but now we had to have a sewage system and all that. So we're designing in such a way that it'll be not create any kind of contamination to the natural situation. So like this, there's many different facets. You may see the temple and the kirtan and so many devotees coming and listening to class, but then during the day some are giving, are teaching in the school, some are working on the computer in the DBT, some are running the printing press, some are in the guest house, some are discussing with people, some are working in the planning department, some are in the construction. Like that, there's about 35 different departments. Food, preaching, book distribution. So this is one of the unique projects where we can engage people with almost any background. And if we get someone who has a background we haven't started before, we may also start a new department. Because we have so many plans, we are not able to start yet due to lack of certain manpower. So anyway, that's a little bit of an idea about Mayapur. If you have any questions, I can try to answer. Everyone knows English. In the Gurukul, we got three different syllabus. One is a totally Brahminical, that's like a toll system. They're not worried about the recognition. They may also consider recognizing some part of the ordinary school if they come up to their standards. That's their point of view. They don't want to come down to that. But then the general system, they are following more or less that syllabus. They're giving academic and everything, and that is connected. In the end, you can sit for the matriculation. But then there's a third is a vocational, where those who are not so much into the studies, after they get the basic study, then they go on to, they get more into vocational training. So the three lines are there. One is a purely Sanskrit-oriented, one is more contemporary, and one is a vocational. You know, most of the parents wanted a lot of parents want a general one, but some parents, they also appreciate the more important is the building of the character. If the person has inclination, then he can, like in the Brahminical, they'll also study science, but they'll study it from a more Vedic perspective. Like they'll do astronomy, but they'll use mathematics, but they have a Vedic mathematics course. So it's interesting also. Now, some people, they like to study both. They go to general classes plus the Vedic classes. Then as you heard announced this morning, they're starting here for all the members of the ashram, they're starting a Bhakti Shastri course. Every from 3 to 4, they'll be training the boys in this room, so that after 1 year they can sit for exam and get a Bhakti Shastri. Also, for people who don't live in the ashram, you can also have a training center in Calcutta, give some courses. If anybody's interested in sitting for the Bhakti Shastri exam over a year or two, you can probably complete the course. There's a 4-degree levels. One of the first level is Bhakti Shastri, then Bhakti Boibhav, Bhakti Vedanta, and then Bhakti Sarvabhoma. So these degrees, then you become qualified also to present Krishna consciousness in different institutions. One of our acharyas in America, he's got a permission to go for 2 years to Harvard to get a PhD. He already had his master's degree because he wants to come here and in Mayapur and in America, wants to set up one university here, one college in America, so that the students from here can also go to America to our college there. His idea is right now in the whole world, every major university has got some professor or lecturer, some department of Indology or department of Hinduism. Indology studies, which will cover everything in Indian continent, or they may say Hinduism, which they may include Jain, Sikh, few things. So what happened is that all the professors are, generally speaking, they're not Indian, they're Western, and they don't really have, they're not also, normally they don't come from this tradition. Maybe they're Christian or something else. So they don't really have that much of a deep idea about what is the philosophy, but they study it in an academic sense. You know, they'll know that from this year to that year there was this sadhu and there was this saint and there was this guru and then this. They'll know all the history. They'll know this philosophy, that philosophy. This is Shankara, he taught Advaitavad and he taught, and Ramanuja, he taught Vishishta Advaita. They know all these, they're scholars. But they don't believe in any of it. They just know it like fact. So they teach it like that. If you ask them, they don't believe. Which one do you believe? I don't believe any of it. I'm just telling you what was there. So that way, this was the way it was before in Islamic studies. In the West, every school has also a department of Islamic study. But all the teachers of Islamic study were also the Christians previously. So they always gave a bad idea about what Islam is. So now the universities in Islamic countries, they start producing PhDs in Islamic studies. So they're getting them jobs in all the major universities around the world. So now mostly the Muslims now have the chair of Islamic studies and they're giving that teaching. So now people have a little more balanced idea about Islam from them. But so far in the Hindu studies, very few chairs are owned by Hindu, and especially not by Vaishnava at all. So the idea is that we infiltrate into all the major universities of the world and get the seats. So when we have the degree course here, we want to produce people who are interested in becoming the professors for Yale, Harvard, Cornell, Oxford, all the universities around the world. They'll get a job there and they'll be the professor. So we'll be one of the few universities specifically giving such a degree. So naturally there'll be a big demand for that. We can take gradually all the students. One of the courses they'll take is a course on now comparative religion in the West. But what they hear about Hinduism or about Indology or the religion of India is usually distorted. That's why they see these movies like Indiana Jones and they show, some horrible dark scene and, ripping the heart out of people and things. And so people have an idea that something from India means it's very barbaric. They don't know really what it is. They took a recent poll in America, 16% of the people have a good idea about Hinduism. 16% have a good idea about Islam. They don't know. And it's not their fault because that's only what they've been taught. So we have our long-range program also to establish university, create doctors and Master Agadavi lecturers and all the universities of the world to be able to present things in the right sense. So like that, we have a lot of long-range programs that we're planning for, we're gradually gearing up for. So some people might want to get into some of those programs in the future. How many of you are students still? I think even the parents won't mind. If you become a professor at Harvard, I don't think anyone will mind. $100,000 a year salary or $50,000 a year, nobody will mind, you know. So in that sense, we won't mind if we can have devotees in all the major universities. They get good salary, it's all right. But they should just give the proper teaching to the children, to the students that are going there. Any other question? To build an airport in Mayapur. Well, we're planning to have boats come from Calcutta to Mayapur. We plan to have a dock. I've been looking into some high-speed jet boats which could reach in less than 3 hours from Calcutta to Mayapur by river. As far as the airplane, that's been talked about for a long time. The problem here is a shortage of land. One idea is the easiest way would be to have an amphibious plane which lands in the Ganges. This is the nearest airport. But someone said that while landing, it shouldn't hit any dead body or anything. Shouldn't hit any logs or something. So we'd have to have a system of fencing off or something, one area, so that nothing would go there when the landing. Otherwise, they say that there's a problem in a river because things are floating. If you hit it at impact at that speed, it's very bad. Otherwise, we're definitely going to have a helipad here. And just near here in Dubulia was the Second World War landing strip for the Allies. British and India at that time when they were fighting for the Allies. Then here was the landing strip. From here they go off to east, to Manipur and then to Japan and that front. So they have gigantic airstrips going about 3-4 kilometers long for those big B-53 bombers. Was it B-53 or B-54? I don't remember. Anyway, 52. So that we're discussing with the civil aviation authorities to convert one of those airstrips as a landing strip, because already it's there. It's so solid, made for those bombers. So light aircraft landing is not the problem. If any of you are interested in aviation, anyone taking flying lessons, you're also thinking about having blimp service from Calcutta to Mayapur, then we can land them right here. Dirigible, blimp, is a helium balloon taking people. They're using that now in England. They go about 80 to 90 kilometers an hour. So from Calcutta to Mayapur, 1 hour. Very quiet, they look very beautiful going over. Huh? They won't? Why? Well, that's not a sport. It will be a commercial thing. License, everything. Well, all the young people can go. You won't be afraid. Right? What is Atma? I couldn't hear. And? Just the Atma. Actually, Atma is the living force in the body. We are the Atma, actually. We are the living force in the body. Now, that's known as soul in English, or spirit, soul, jiva. Bhagavad Gita explains that Atma is situated in the heart. And the Atma is giving the energy to the heart, and it spreads the consciousness throughout the body to the bloodstream. So actually, the body is a machine. Gita says, Yanta Rurani Maya. This is a machine made of the material nature. And the Atma is actually what is seeing everything. Atma is just a small particle, but that's just like now, in our computer, that CPU is just a small chip. You may have a big computer, but everything is depending on the small chip, the CPU, central processing unit. So Krishna is a much better designer. He puts everything in a small spark. Everything is there. That spark contains all life, all consciousness, that is undivisible, eternal, is a part of Krishna. So that has got unlimited potency, but it's really small. So that's situated in the heart, giving the consciousness to the whole body. So through the blood, so if we take, for instance, we take a rope, we tie it around our arm, we cut off the blood, then if what the Gita is saying is correct, is a scientific experiment, then we should lose the feeling in our arm after a while. Once we cut off the blood, means the connection between the hand and the heart will be cut. So you'll lose the sense of feeling, because that won't be able to reach. So does that happen? Did anyone want to try, or have you experienced? You know, already tried. If you sit in the wrong way, your leg also falls asleep by cutting off the circulation. So this is a very practical thing. It's like the sun is situated in the middle of the universe and giving the light throughout the whole solar system. That the Atma is in the heart, giving the consciousness throughout the whole body. So we are that dynamic living force. We are that soul. But we are operating, like in submarine, they've got periscope, radar, sonar, so many things. So inside the submarine, they can't see anything. And they don't look like outside the window, what they'll see, it's all dark. They see through all the radar, sonar, and periscopes and everything. So like that, we're in the inside, but we are seeing everything through the senses. Through the eyes, the ears, the sense of touch, smell, hearing. So this way we get all of the information. Now what is the Maya is that the Atma is thinking, I am this machine. Actually the machine is meant to be controlled by the Atma and used for a higher purpose, which Atma should realize itself. Then it becomes self-realized. That means then Atma becomes in control of its own destiny fully. Becomes in control of its own situation. By realizing the self, we realize the origin of the self, which is Krishna. Now, when the Atma is not engaged in self-realization, then the Atma gets dragged along and the body actually is taking control. The Atma is thinking, I am the body. If the body suffers, the Atma thinks, I am suffering. If the body is happy, then the Atma thinks, I am happy. Due to the false identification, this is called ahankara, or false ego. So there's a false ego and the real ego. Real ego is when Atma realizes its own self, that is eternal, beyond the body. Even the body dies. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire. Atma never dies, only the body dies. So we identify, we think we're the body, so then, oh, you're going to kill me. But actually the Atma doesn't die. You kill my body, you can't kill me. Atma will go on again, take another birth. So we go on taking birth until Atma is self-realized, God-realized. Then when you have Atma Upalabdhi, realization of self, then you achieve liberation. Then you are freed from the reincarnation. So we want the people to get free from this bondage. That's why all the effort to educate people in this science. Modern civilization is very conscious about the body, but they are neglecting the Atma. This is the state. Yes? In every one of us, the Paramatma is there. But Paramatma doesn't interfere. He's a witness only. He tells us, don't do this. Someone has a conscience. Inside there's a voice that says, you shouldn't do it. It's not good. But we ignore it sometimes. We do anyway. So God is telling us, don't do it. Some people, they have no conscience. They stopped listening so long ago that Krishna doesn't bother to tell them anymore. He knows they don't care. They don't want to hear. But for good people, he tells, you shouldn't do it. He gives some advice. When someone is completely pure, then they can directly hear, see God face to face in the heart. So then they don't do those forbidden things. But generally, each of us is given some free will. We've got that swatanta icha, what we'll do or what we want to do, we are able to do that. So somebody decide, I want to kill. So maybe somebody will say, if you kill, you'll suffer. Even he thinks himself, if I kill him, I may get caught, police may kill me, I may get the bad karma. He may think so many things, or may not think, depending on. But still he does it out of lust, out of anger, out of some misplaced idea. So that free will we are given. So with a free will, we can use it properly or we can misuse it. If we misuse it, we have to take the bad karma. If we use properly, then we get the good results. So that independence Krishna gives to the human being, because with that independence also comes the possibility to love for Krishna. Love cannot come unless you give independence. You are totally controlled. There's no question of love. Love has to be voluntary. So to give the human beings the chance to love him, he has to also give them the chance to act in a free way. Sometimes Krishna intervenes. If it's with a devotee, like Prahlad, then he stepped in and he said, no, you can't kill my devotee. But generally, he doesn't interfere. If it's dealing with his devotee, if it's very unjust, many people, they get saved also. There was some plane accident. Plane came down and smashed. Everybody in the plane was killed, but the plane opened up and one attendant thrown out, landed on the seat and walked away. No harm. So how it happened? There's also the karma. The people get, they do so many bad things and then they get the reaction. The one person didn't fit with the rest of the group, so he was separated out. All right, I save you now. All these also joining now the classes, or? They're not part of the... You know English? We're taking any questions if anyone has question and answer. We want all the people to practice. We don't expect everybody to come and stay in the temple and practice. Some people who are a missionary spirit, who have got some revolutionary enthusiasm that they want to actually do something to help others. Certain number of people we need to be dedicated into this line. But apart from that, we want everyone to practice in their homes. The problem is, like, say someone, if everybody in the house is doing it, then it's fairly easy. And in those houses, usually they don't mind also if one son goes and does in the temple. The problem is that in the home, say, they are not into the spiritual life, and one person wants to do, they'll always obstruct it in a direct and indirect way. Why you are doing? You can't watch here now. This you can see the Wimbledon tennis match. So you always sit there for a few hours watching. You know, okay. Then you do this, then this, and then you know. In this way, the time goes. You know, instead of using it for something more productive. They go on pulling in. So if that environment sometime in the house is very difficult, just like if you want to study, sometime it's very hard in the house. You have to go to a library or go to some quiet place, or you lock yourself in your room. Because if you want to get good marks, you have to study, you have to concentrate. But other people, they may not have that same pressure. They're not concerned. And spiritual life is even more. It's the house, it's practices. Like in the future, it may be that people will go and join ashram for, say, 1 or 2 years, get some in training. Like in the Mormon church, for 2 years, from 18 to 20, everyone, before getting married, they had to go for 2 years for preaching. Then that they can come back, then only they'll be given, allowed to marry. Maybe in the future there'll be something like that. Because obviously most of the people will be in their homes. That we're already arranging Namhad and other programs, so many are practicing in the home. But home means a lot of time is wasted in maintenance, or it's whether wasted or it's used up in maintenance. So when someone's advanced in how they can appreciate it, well, in temple you can always be doing Krishna Seva. Where in house you don't get that much opportunity, maybe 50% or some percent you can do. Not 100% is difficult. But we have a scope for both. We're not saying everybody has to come in the temple. People should come when only if they are actually convinced, they feel that dedication. You see, the ashrams won't run. Everybody likes to come and tell Mayapur is such a nice place, nice and clean. But how is that? Unless there's somebody managing, unless there's people who are organizing, nothing happens. Why you go in Howrah Station and if it's clean or dirty? It's because of management or lack of it. So all this, anything requires manpower, organization, money, and the land. Whether spiritual, material, anything you do requires it. So ashrams require, we have here also so many married people. We don't say that even if you join the ashram, someone between up to 25 or 30, they should remain brahmachari. After that, if they want, they can get married. So many people, they remain in the dedicated, but both husband and wife, they're doing Krishna seva as a grihastha. So that's why we call this mandir, all this other mat, Gaudiya mat, different mat. Mat means only sadhus, only sannyasis. But in this temple, we have sannyasis, brahmacharis, we also have grihasthas, we have all this side. We're not trying to force anybody to do something which is not natural for them. According to their nature, they should do Krishna seva. So we hope that in the future, the parents will also be proud. Just like they're proud if their son gets a job in America doing software engineering. They think, oh, my son is now working in America. Actually, they're working for some Indian company. They're being paid 3,000 or 4,000 rupees a month. They're sent overseas on a contract. They're getting a little allowance, they're writing. Then after 2 years contact, they come back. But the parents are very proud, yes, my son has gone to America. We hope that parents also be proud, oh, my son has become, he's taken up the career of Krishna consciousness. He's the general manager in Mayapur, or he's the president of the temple in Asansol. Or he's, up to now, parents are not adapted yet because they got so many, few parents, not many parents, they get confused. One of our vice president of Bangalore, he was the number one student in Indian Institute of Science. So, but he decided after graduation, and the president, he's also a graduate from IIT in Bombay. So they decided that they'll dedicate to Krishna consciousness. Now they become president and vice president of Bangalore. So first the mother, she was naturally very upset, you should become an accountant. You should become a, business, something, be a scientist. So what's better, sitting, doing a, even doing accounting was better, do accounting for Krishna or just doing, if the service is there in Krishna consciousness, so why not do it directly for Krishna? Why go outside? And if you're able to preach to help other people, Like now they are constructing a 10 crore rupee project with auditorium. He just flew with me, the vice president. I took him to America, and he went and he visited his third trip to America. He went and he talked to the biggest. He went to Disney World. He went all the places, not as a tourist, but we want to have some of these exhibits in our Bangalore project. So they said, yes, it will be about $100,000. You do like this, and they gave the brochure. I said, you know, going, you know, not going distance, you know, like begging for some employment. He's going now as a big corporate manager. But up till 9 in the morning, everyone is there chanting their japa, taking the class. And then rest of the day, they're doing all the Krishna's work. So I was a student in Brown University. Brown is connected with Harvard. I had a full scholarship. I could have gone and, but what I would have got some job in material life. So this is a much better career, to be a devotee of Krishna and to be helping others. Why should I used to think I had to just work for someone else. They'll pay me some money, I'll make money for them. Or I may be self-employed, and I make money for myself, spend it on sense gratification. So even if someone does that, we are saying, okay, you make money, but spend, use the money in such a way that you'll be Krishna conscious, make your house Krishna. That's also an option. We are not expecting everyone will take this option. We are hoping some people will take it. And we want to establish that in India, that this is a respectable thing. Like in Ireland, every family, they want one of the family members should become a Catholic priest. That was considered an honorable thing. If you have 5 children, one should become a priest. So that's why you find, like in India, many Catholic priests, they were from Ireland or Scotland. Scottish churches, Charles College, or they're not Irish, they're not Catholic, they're the English, Anglican. But like that was the tradition. You know. So, but somehow now in India, everyone, that tradition is lost. Before, you know, we want to start. Why not? If you have 5 children, let one be a preacher. Why not? What is that? It's also a viable thing. It's honorable. Before, to be a Brahmin, to be a preacher, that wasn't a disgraceful thing. It was very honorable. And all the Brahmanas, they're also Grihasthas. They were the Rajgurus. They were the teachers. They were the professors. Now the profession is there, but the character is not there. They lost the character. Just like we want people to get trained up, get PhD, work in all the universities, but maintain your brahminical standards. This is a very revolutionary outlook. The mother is just thinking, whether you're in the house or whether you're here, they're not thinking, what is the purpose? If my purpose is served by being in the house, I'll be in the house. What is the problem? If my purpose isn't served by being in the house, why I'll stay in the house? If someone gets an IAS job, will he stay in the house? He'll be transferred to Punjab or to Kashmir or to Andhra or wherever he gets an IAS posting or IPS. He won't stay necessarily with the mother in the same house. He'll be shifted here and there. So we also have IAS, India, ISKCON, Administrative Service, IPS, ISKCON Preaching Service. Now there's very big demand for devotees to go in the West. Right now in America, from Mayapur, there must be at least 50 devotees in America and all the temples. 3 devotees in Philadelphia, 1 devotee in Vancouver. Head of the preaching department in Berkeley is also Radha Madhav Das. About 4 or 5 devotees are in San Diego. 3 or 4 devotees are in Los Angeles. I saw 4 devotees in New York. Now, somehow, like, scattered. So they depend a lot because for pujas, for preaching to Indian community, the Indian devotees are more adapted for cooking Indian dishes than for some, you know. So those type of devotees are going to America. Few are going for higher preaching. Our Adi Ruda, who was here in charge of Light Membership Department, and he was running the store here. He's a Marwadi by previous birth. He shifted over to Los Angeles, and he's in charge of all the preaching in Los Angeles. So his brother offered, listen, he could be doing 3-4 crores rupees business in Patna. They got big shops, everything. He went there. I said, this is horrible. All day I got to sit there and sell saris. You can make a lot of money, but you got to manage all the time just selling the saris just to make money. Instead, now he all day he's selling Krishna, telling people that how, and organizing, going house to house, getting people to be practicing Krishna consciousness in Los Angeles area. So he's got 5,000 people that he's dealing with. So that way he can be Krishna conscious, his wife and children can be Krishna conscious. He's married, he has children, 2 children now. So just a different, you see, we're adding a different perspective, you know. It's not that, this is a question, like people get idea, if I join, I've got to be like some kind of a sannyasi my whole life. That option is there. Someone is not attracted to the, getting into the family life, they can remain as sannyasi, but it's very small percent. ISKCON has got lakhs of members, we've got 100 sannyasis. But we've got maybe 10, 50, maybe 50,000 brahmacharis. But married people, we've got unlimited. So those people, they have that type of tyaga, they can remain. It's better in, if you can remain brahmachari, because you don't have to deal with so many family affairs. But not everyone is of that nature, so there's also scope to get married. But we're trying to show there's a spiritual necessity to also be preaching and doing this type of activity. Before, they were brahmanas. That was their livelihood. You see, now you're born brahmana. What's your occupation? I'm a CPA, or I'm a, you know, lecturer, I'm a, you know, businessman. Maybe born brahman, but what's the occupation is totally different. But previously there was Brahman who was, occupation was what? He was Brahmana. Now who is acting as Brahman in society? So we are trying to establish, you know, but so who, because before society was maintaining the Brahmanas, the kings would give, the people would give dakshina to Brahmanas. Now who's giving? So now we are organizing the ISKCON society that we can have certain Brahmanas and they can live simply, we'll maintain. If they want more luxury, they want more opulence, we can't supply. Then they have to work outside. And they can serve in their house. We don't mind. But if they can live a little simply, then they can also just act as a brahmana in the temple. They may be born any caste, any creed. That's what I was saying, like in the class today, the scorpion can come out from the rice or come out from the mother. So it's coming out from the rice. So we're not trying to, we want people, you see, don't feel ever any pressure. You're not trying to get anybody that they should unnaturally feel, I have to join into the temple. We want people to be Krishna conscious, whether in the house or in the temple. We have an opportunity in the temple. The people join in that temple preaching for 1 year, 2 years, for the whole life, we'll be very happy. If they stay in the house and they practice Krishna consciousness, we'll also be very happy. We need both. We need everyone to be Krishna conscious. But we need people to be dedicated and be helping to spread this consciousness to others. Because right now it's a big need in the world.
Without desiring anything, you also can be.
Yeah, I'm just giving. Nobody comes in like filling a post. It's like you go in the army, you start off as a private, you know. Then you get, according to how responsible you are, what nature you have, what aptitude you have, naturally then the services are given. We start off in a simple way. Like I joined, I cleaned the temple floor. I cut the sabjis in Montreal, Canada. I was doing that, just a simple service. But then, because I was very enthusiastic, they kept giving me more service. See, someone think, why they give me all the service, others are not doing. That person won't get ahead very fast. By head, I mean ahead in bhakti. We're not worrying about position, we just want seva. The more seva we do for Krishna, that goes up in our spiritual bank account. So that the more spiritual bank account we get, the closer we get to Krishna.